When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
It's In This League.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Come again?
With Scott Bogman and Chris Welsh.
Can't wait.
What does that do? Does that blow your mind?
That just happened.
We're here to talk to you about the wonderful world of Dynasty Fantasy Sports. Well, if you enjoy playoff sports, as in real playoff sports, the NHL and NBA playoffs have been quite a kick right now. It's been good times over there watching those things. And we're only like a month out from drafts in both of those sports. You will hear some, well, if you need some fantasy hockey draft coverage, Victor is going to have a lot of that over on Dauber Prospects Radio or Dauber Prospect Report. For basketball coverage, we should have pretty soon here an upcoming episode about the basketball rookie draft coming up after the NBA draft. So you can stay tuned for all of those things. We're about a month out from those drafts. NFL, of course, continues apace. But today, it's all about the baseball because that's what season it is. You're in the middle of your lineups. You're in the middle of getting through your championship season. So right after this, we're going to have a great guest, Brent Hershey. I am thrilled to have on one of the guys who is right there making things happen in the industry, Brent Hershey of Baseball HQ and USA Today, can I say? How are you doing today, Brent?
Pretty good, Jesse. Thanks for the invitation. Glad to hang out with you for a little bit and talk some baseball.
Absolutely, yeah. We'll get to first pitch later, but you put together that event every year, and it's like my favorite time of the year to go down and hang out with those folks, and lots of good material together. But I always, the first time I have somebody on the show, I like to ask a question about how you got into fantasy or what your experience is. And I don't know if you're big on the dynasty game. We've got things we're going to talk about today, but what's your background, Brent?
Sure. Yeah, I grew up a baseball geek in a family that wasn't even interested in sports. I think I got my parents to actually go to their first major league game because I was so interested in it. Stories about, reading off box scores when I was, 8-10 years old and keeping books of writing down all kinds of stuff. And I just the baseball bug hit me early. And in college, I finished a journalism degree, and so did a lot of writing and kind of meshed that together after college, and found Baseball HQ, which Ron Chandler had started, of course, around that time, and started freelancing there. The first time that I responded when he was asking for new writers, I know I got rejected. So that's always interesting to look back on. And there's several other of my colleagues at Baseball HQ with the same sort of thing, where we didn't always latch on in the first chance, but kept after it. And sometime soon after that that I submitted another application, and that worked out. So that was, I think I started freelancing for them in for Baseball HQ in maybe 1999, I think. Anyway, I did that throughout a bunch of years. A bunch of things shifted and started working more as a part-time role, using more of my kind of journalism editorial skills to help all the writers there sharpen up some things. That was in around 2009, 2010, something like that, I believe. Anyway, it morphed into a full-time job at this point. My partner, Ray Murphy, and I took over the day-to-day operations, I think, in 2013, 2014 from Ron, and have been running Baseball HQ ever since. Back to your question about getting involved in actually leagues, it was during college that a roommate of mine found the rotisserie book, original one that folks talk about, and that was in the very early 90s. And so, yeah, college, we started a college buddies league at that point that actually still going on, a 12-team AL only, what's now AL only auction league, and with I think five of us maybe that are original members, and some other guys, and we still get together in person the first weekend of the season every year, and it's a great time. And from there, obviously expanded into other formats. That's a keeper league, and that kind of piqued my interest in kind of the keeping some continuity from year to year. If you're out of it, you kind of made trades looking to the future, and it wasn't a strict dynasty league necessarily, but always enjoyed that format. More recently, I've gotten into, it's funny looking back, there was a time when I was like, I don't see why or how anyone could get into anything other than like a dynasty or keeper league, because that's how the majors are. You kind of plan for the future, all that sort of stuff. But more recently, I have dabbled in some NFBC formats and more redraft leagues, and have found those to be just as fun too. It's just a good reminder that find whatever suits you and just enjoy it. There's no hierarchy of format or whatever. I mean, it's a game. It's supposed to be fun. Just enjoy what you like. Right now, I'm actually not currently in any dynasty, official kind of dynasty leagues. The last one I was involved in was a semi-industry league that folded several years ago. I do play scoresheet format, which is a bit different. Has a longer keeper list that includes some minor leaguers. I get my fix for that in scoresheet. But I do find myself as going throughout. When we're prepping the minor league book or doing all the prospect stuff, I realize I don't have a spot to grab an early, a young guy in single A or an international free agent that I think would be fun to stash. I don't really have a spot to do that. Yeah, it would not surprise me if I jump back into a official dynasty league at some point in the near future. But right now, my portfolio is full too. So.
No, I gotcha. I hear you there. The good news is if you remove a redraft league, that's easy because you just don't have to come back 1 year. And then dynasty is tougher to get out of. But yeah. I know also you co-hosted, and I think you've taken a little bit of a step back, but the Eyes Have It podcast, we've had Chris Blessing on several times, or I've had Chris Blessing on. Why am I speaking of myself in the plural? But I know you've taken a little bit of a step back, but you've talked prospects on that show quite a bit.
Yeah, I've kept that up some. Yeah, I'm on there once a month now. It's in its fourth year, I believe. And yeah, I still keep my interest kind of in the prospect lane. As I mentioned briefly, I still edit the Minor League Baseball Analyst book and write up, involved in the writing team for that too. So the prospects thing is certainly, for a long time, has been a focus of mine too, which is fun. I don't get out to the fields as much as I had up until a couple of years ago, but I'm fortunate to live in an area where there's a lot of minor league affiliates within an hour, 20-minute drive at different levels, and it's fun fun to go out there and do a little scouting or whatever on my own, and have gotten some really interesting looks at players coming up throughout different systems that that I think I use that insight a little bit from time to time once they hit the majors and all that. So it's a it's a fun deal.
Yeah. So I thought today, since you do play keeper, and you have a very long experience with being involved in following the game and how it has evolved, is we could take on some topics more of a general nature in baseball, because dynasty and keeper players, one of the things we really think about is not only where is the game now, but skate to the puck, so to speak. Where is it going to be in three, 4, 5 years? What are some of the changes that are happening affecting the prospects or the young players we value? Are there things we need to assume are going to change? So I posed you a few different questions, and I did a little bit of stuff. I know you've done a little bit of stuff, but the first question that I have on my mind today, Brent, and I think this has been brought up at First Pitch, is the robo-umps.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's In This League.
No one asked you anything ever, so whomever's name is
In This League,
why don't you take a letter opener and stick it in your skull?
Hey. There is a sense that maybe in the next few years it does. Dynasty players, keeper players need to think about how will that impact us. I've got a couple things on this, but I'll say it is in AAA now. It started and was going last year. They had it going in a general sense. Then at the end of the year, they tweaked it to account for hitter height. And, of course, it's still going this year. What do you think of this impact potentially on the game?
I think there's a couple threads to pull at with regards to the automated strike zone. I think one thing is still to be determined is the fact that it has been going on in the minor leagues, as you said, for several years. And I wonder if the transition for players from AAA to the majors will be any different once the automated strike zone is implemented, whatever form that takes in the majors. I know there was some, in the past couple of years, there's been some talk about how it makes it a bit more difficult, that the circumstances are changing from a player that is in AAA and has played all year, part of the year, maybe a couple of years with that in place, and then moves to the majors where it's not a part of what they do. Whether that's the different kind of strike zone a little bit, or that's the high pitches that get called more, or the lows that get less, all that kind of stuff. So I don't know that we can use that now to predict, everyone's going to have an easier time making that transition, because that's just one part of what goes into a successful debut, so to speak, because obviously there's skill level and there's all kinds of other factors there. But I think it's something to watch for and maybe note to see if that for both hitters and pitchers, if that transition gets made easier because those circumstances remain in place. I think the other thing that some others have brought up too, I think, is that it probably will affect the catcher pool some, just by nature of if the framing aspect goes away or is disincentivized, again, depending on how it's implemented. My guess is that it will be implemented first as this challenge system that they've been using in AAA. Umps will still be there calling balls and strikes. The pitcher or hitter gets a certain number of pitches they can challenge. I have seen that in play in the minors and in the Arizona Fall League. And it sounds like it's would be horrible, but when you're in there, it is pretty quick. And I don't think it doesn't seem like it'll be as disruptive to the flow of the game as what it sounds like, where you have to, if you're challenging that, you have to look and all that sort of thing. If they bop it up on the big screen and it is a ball or it is a strike and you move on. But back to the catchers, I think that if in that case framing goes away, I think there will be over time less emphasis than on that aspect of a catcher's defense. And so there's probably going to be some movement into where catchers that are stronger hitters will get added to the pool, because if they're not good at framing right now, that's a important part of playing time and what the major league team takes into consideration for playing these guys, where if that's one less attribute they have to worry about, perhaps the catcher pool gets a little deeper as far as bats. Now, I say all that and knowing that, like, right now, as we've talked about that for the past couple of years, the hitter catcher pool is as deep as it's been for a while. Sure, there's some guys that have disappointed this year, but there's seems to be more options in that way. But I think that's just, I think that could continue to move in that way, given the ABS system coming in.
Yeah. Brent, let me pull at the threads of a couple of the threads and we'll talk with the catchers. I've got some data too I want to circle back to with the strike zone. But when you talk about the ability of some of these catchers potentially to bypass the defender, I took the liberty of pulling some of the players from the minor league baseball analysts that you edit and a number of you contribute to. And I looked at the list of the top catchers. And let me tell you, the number one catcher, I hope I'm not spoiling anything. People should still go back and buy that book if they hadn't. But the number one catcher in your list, Ethan Salas. And if you go back and read his comment in there, it amazing hitter, only 17. But according to this, he is, quote, a raw defender. So right there, Samuel Basayo, second one, his receiving, obviously hitting off the charts, his receiving, not so great. He'll probably have to move to first base is the analysis, but he's got the arm strength. That part won't go away when the automated strike zone comes in. And Harry Ford is the number three. He led the Northwestern League in walks and OBP, and he has stolen two bases each of the last 2 years. But according to the comment that y'all have there, he will need polish with framing and blocking. So once again, these are guys who already the top catcher prospects are guys who we believe are going to be offensive contributors and maybe even have the arm strength to keep throwing batters out. That part of the game's not going away. But the framing is, of course, the killer, the thing that slows these guys down. So again, like you say, these guys might not get weeded out in the process and be stopped. And if Ethan Salas and Samuel Basayo's got a Adley Rutschman problem, but these guys can come up into the majors and fill in, my goodness, there is a bumper crop of some of these hitters coming up.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point and a good confirmation of my own of our own book that I hadn't thought about in doing it. That's an interesting way to look at it, and just as you note, those having almost the biggest minuses for each of those players is some sort of defensive thing. I think we also need to, as you alluded to, be careful that framing is not all of the defense either. Of course, the blocking, there's the arm strength, there's game calling and connecting with your pitchers and stuff. That's a very important kind of non-bat related characteristic of these catchers that will be important, it will remain to be important.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's In This League.
Got what plants crave. It's got electrolytes.
What are electrolytes? Do you even know? It's what they used to make.
In This League.
I'm the smartest guy in the world. Says who?
The IQ test you took in prison. Brought to you by Carl's Jr.
But I think it's an interesting thought exercise about how it will affect the catcher pool for us fantasy players, especially.
Yeah, obviously, the list that you guys have is sorted by fantasy value. But if these guys break through, like you said, though, the things that won't go away will include the ability to throw out, the ability to call a game and work with a pitcher. And frankly, the other thing is we do have to consider the wear and tear will still be there. Salvi Perez will still be an outlier in the number of games that he used to be able to be out there until he's the mileage over the years. But so I don't think we should start expecting catchers to outperform first basemen in fantasy value, but relative to one another, if you could raise that level to the point where they're not so far under replacement value, that is just going to change the whole market for catchers. So
They'll still be squatting all those days and taking all those foul tips off the mask or off the hand and all that kind of stuff. So that will not change.
And you gave a great explanation to this, but I just wanted to throw a couple of studies at you about these transitions of pitchers and batters from the automated strike zone. What we don't have right now, obviously, is what happens to batters and pitchers when they're in the major leagues with the automated strike zone. Doesn't exist yet, as you said. What we do have is what happened to AAA pitchers and hitters before and after the transition. And then the other, what's going on from the AAA to major league transition and whether that's been any different. And there's a couple studies from Jeff Zimmerman that he did that are relevant on this point. I think they confirm what you've been saying. Last year, he did a study that showed that the impact of the automated strike zone has been very pro-pitcher so far in AAA. Strikeout rates went up with the automated strike zone. Walk rates went down. ERA dropped half a run from early to late 2023 in AAA. So definitely the early winners have been the pitchers. And then last year, as those guys, all the players transitioned from AAA to the major leagues, it actually got worse. Strikeout rates went up further for the guys when they went into the majors, and walk rates got better at a different rate. And then when we come to this year, and looking at guys making debuts, Zimmerman just wrote a couple of weeks ago about some of the debuts this year, and it seems to be kicking their butts on both ends, because when the automated strike zone came in, strikeout rates went up and walks went down in the minors, and now the guys who are going from the automated strike zone to the major leagues are the hitters, their strikeout rates are going up even more. And their walk rates are going down even more. Now, the sample size is extremely small at this point, so there are not too many things. And you think about this in the context of these things can go back and forth. It's an arms race right away. Yeah. Maybe the pitchers are winning. Maybe the batters figure out the automated strike zone a little bit later. But the thing I think of in the big picture here is that this is not what Major League Baseball wants to happen. If the accuracy of the automated strike zone means less scoring and more strikeouts, I ain't thinking that's going to fly, because that's the opposite of what Theo Epstein is telling Rob Manfred to do in the major leagues, right? Yeah, we want triples. Right. We want stolen bases. We don't want as many strikeouts. I don't understand. Can you make hide or hair? I'm throwing this at you out of the blue, but can you make hide or hair of how the automated strike zone can be pro pitcher in the minor leagues and come back to haunt all these guys, the batters, when they go further to the major leagues to try to do this?
Yeah. No, it's a good point. And that's a little bit what I alluded to by once the circumstances are similar between the two, that it's just, there's a sense of it's apples and oranges right now as you're trying. And our task as fantasy players, especially with these young guys, is so important to try to get right who is going to hit the ground running and who is going to struggle. If we knew those things as far as prospects debuting and that sort of deal, that's a big advantage for us as those that dig into the fantasy space like that. And it's just a different setup between the two, given the strike zone. But I'd forgotten about those studies by Jeff and how that dovetails into some of the early data we have this year. And again, with some of the highest rated guys, Jackson Holliday, Jackson Churio, all the Jacksons.
Just have had so many Jacksons.
Yeah, have had rough starts.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back for some more, and the next question, this one has been bugging me for a while, and I think there was a good presentation again. I'm just going to keep plugging First Pitch the whole time. Sorry, I hope you don't mind. Is the fate of the quality start, because I'm old enough to remember when quality start was an incredibly progressive stat. You were cool and outthinking the competition of other leagues if you were using quality starts, because wins were so insane. You had pitchers who pitched very good games, but the game would fall apart with the bullpen or no run support, and a quality start would allow you to reward the pitcher who had a very good pitching performance, but within the confines of what it was at that time. And now, the third time through the order penalty has meant those things are going away. The fact that tipping point for the third time through the order very often comes before the sixth inning mark. So you could be pitching perfectly fine, but get taken out before six innings. And it's not at all unusual. And I got a couple numbers for you. 2013, the Major League Baseball had 2,556 quality starts. By 2018, 1996, we're down like 20%. Mm-hmm. Then 2023, last year, we're down to 1683, another 15% beyond that. Currently, we're on a slightly higher pace this year for 1784, but it's still early. People aren't worn out yet. So I've set up dynasty leagues with quality starts, and now I horribly regret it because I'm starting to think that sucker, it's not quite this bad. We used to set up leagues where some people would set up leagues where no hitters were a category. How stupid is that? Because there's going to be like three in the season. When the sample gets smaller and smaller, it feels you are less differentiated based on the talent of the players, and especially one that we did to ourselves, like quality start, that isn't, it's actually hard to find quality start data because it's something somebody made up, and it's not even, I don't think, an official MLB statistic. So I don't know, Brent, if I started a league today, I don't think I would use quality start, but what do you think of maybe both that metric, if you happen to use, I don't know if you happen to use it, a lot of roto leagues obviously wouldn't, but that and what else, this injury load management, the decreasing innings pitch, are we at a breaking point that we need to reassess the way that we play our game because of all this?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. I do not play in any leagues with quality starts, not because I hate it or anything. It just hasn't come up in the individual leagues that I play in. But yes, how the game is going, you gave the data, there's no denying that is becoming more scarce, and it almost adds sort of a randomness to the game. And part of, for some, I don't know if this was your situation, but for some folks, they were using quality starts instead of wins, which was, I think the impetus behind that was to take the randomness out of the wins. And now how the game's gone, quality starts is filling that role in that same way. Yeah, I think one of the challenges for, especially now that we're gone on decades upon decades of playing this game. It's adapting some of our rules to what's going on in the majors. And I haven't heard anyone, given the fact that I think you're right, that all of these starts is a made up and not tracked stat by some kind of official stat services. I haven't really heard about changing the parameters of what a quality start is. That's something that folks should consider. Is there some aspect of, and again, it depends on your stat service and if they can handle that, but can you reduce the innings pitched threshold and or play with the earned runs amount to almost redefine like quality starts? Would that be worth it? Would that be too jarring for everybody? I'm curious, given your experience, it sounds like, with that in certain spots, how that strikes you, actually.
Yeah, that's I guess I should have said at the outset, just in case anybody listening here doesn't know what a quality start, you have to have at least six innings pitched. You have to have three or fewer earned runs. That's what qualifies you for it. But yeah, that's not a bad idea to reduce the number. It's just there are so many performances of a guy who goes out 5 1/3 and maybe gives up two earned runs, but that doesn't count, because in the old days, that would be a failure. You are taxing the bullpen because you weren't out there long enough. Maybe there is a way to do that, and I wonder what the count would be if you tried to do that.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is that it's so easily, it's so ingrained in us and rounded out, right? Six innings pitch, three earned runs. You know what that is, where if you're readjusting that, you're probably, I don't know, you're probably not taking, you're not leaving it a whole number and making it less, unless you want to go 5-2 or something like that. But that seems, I don't know. Just an idea. Just tossing that around.
Yeah. And no, and it is, because it's no longer the case that the manager would say, oh, he's given up less than three. We're going to send him out, finish off this six before we get our bullpen. But
yeah,
that's a way to go. The other thing I've thought about is, I'm starting to become more and more convinced of, is just to replace it with innings pitched, which is the ultimate streamer move. But again, it's going to impact your ERA and WHIP. So it does bite you on the back end, but really it rewards guys who can pitch through the third time in the order and just fill it up.
Yeah. I was going to mention that too, as another option that some folks have advocated for. And to me, that does make sense. Like, you know, on a level, like, the pitcher's job is to get the outs and rack up those innings. Because again, that's a clock of the game, of a baseball, right? Is the 27 outs. We don't have a clock, but that's the time. That's the framing of the major league game we're playing. And so those outs at one level, and which accumulate into innings pitched, is a way to gauge how successful a pitcher is going to be. And in that case too, that also brings in, again, given how the MLB game is being played, that also brings in more value to some of these swing guys or followers, like the Ryan Yarbrough types, right? Who can go, or Nick Martinez this week, who can go five innings in the middle of a game and yes or no might be eligible for a win. But if they're doing five, six innings a week between a couple outings to add to your innings pitch total, perhaps that's a viable alternative to either quality starts or wins, really.
Yes, sir. And so that would be a possibility. Let's move on to the next topic, Brent. And that is about the debuts of rookies. I feel like I have a contrary take. Maybe I'm just being ignorant as to what the majority take is here. But players are making earlier and earlier debuts. And I think that there is a focus from the general public on service time manipulation being a matter of making guys slow roll into the major leagues so that we can get that, you know, teams can get that extra year of arbitration. And that's the way that they ensure cost control. I see it the other way around. I see those as the exceptions, but the rule is bringing up more and more waves of prospects younger and younger that you can use for their pre-arb years and then dispose of. That's, I think that's really what's going on with this thing. And it's because teams are better at developing players younger. There's a little bit more maybe scientific of an approach and better analysis of who is going to be able to succeed. And maybe, frankly, there's some teams that just don't care how well they do when they make it up.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
In this league.
Oh, I remember.
I love it.
In this league.
Yeah, I remember that.
But this is what's squeezing the middle class of players is the fact that pre-arb players are so cheap and plentiful compared to what they used to be. So we get more and more young guys. Now, as that's political, philosophical stuff, so I'm not really getting into all the economics of baseball. But for us dynasty players, this does impact us because the middle class of players sometimes is flaming out of MLB earlier. And these prospects, we're watching them more and more because they're going to get MLB time earlier and earlier, quicker from their draft date, and at least be used for a couple of years to get a chance. You know, we're all sitting here, you know, claiming, oh, gosh, hurry up and call up X prospect. There's something to that, but there's also something to, I think most of the time, the team is going to hurry up and get him up when they think he can do anything in the major leagues. But what do you think? Do you agree with my take on some of how teams are treating youth and prospects and rookies? Because scientifically or empirically, the date is getting the age is getting younger of guys coming up. The number of at-bats going to young players is rising. But is that something that you think has dynasty implications too, or fantasy implications on the way we want to draft our teams and our players?
Yeah, I think you certainly, it's a trend. Yes. They're putting these incentives in place. So supposedly that manipulation is a bit less. I think it's still, I think that's working, although I think it's still a little bit to be determined. But I think the point that you make about the middle class, about how it's moving some of those guys out quicker, is a good one. In a dynasty context, especially, because sometimes, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because you probably have more dynasty experience than I, but if there are times when I was playing when it was not only important to identify the guys early, get them in your farm system, obviously try to develop and hang on to the high upside guys, but there's always roster holes that you have and that you can fill in around, whether it's a first, even if it's a first year player draft or if it's a in-season free agent pickup, that could be filled by a player that's not a superstar, but playing all the time, giving you a certain stat floor and the stability there. Those types of players can overlap with this group that you're talking about that maybe isn't getting the chance to do that, to be a second division regular in the major leagues that you don't have to worry about in your dynasty team, whether it's on your bench that you can fill in for an injury, or whether it's a starter, one of your low end starters. Curious if that's for you. Am I off on that, or does that make some sense?
Yeah, you need to think more about those players than you did in the past, for sure, Brent.
Yeah. I think that's just one of the points. I think the other thing is that I definitely would agree with is that player development has gotten so advanced. That is a big part of what's driving the debuts that are happening earlier. Again, as we said earlier in the show, those still are, there's high profile ones that are missing a lot too. And some of that is you think these guys are prepared, you think they're mentally strong enough to withstand some failure and stick through it, and they get to the majors and they're just not quite ready, and they get sent back down. But I think there is going to be a spot where there's like a floor for this, right? It's not going to be that even the top guy gets drafted out of high school and goes right to the majors, is there? Maybe.
No.
But I think that we're getting to the point where I don't know that it's going to continue to get younger. I think even one of the most polished players, you have Paul Skeens, for instance, from last year,
mm-hmm.
even the most polished players that have played at a high level in college and are a few years further along and more physically developed and had the high level experience that's closer to the major leagues than a Holiday or someone that's drafted as a high schooler. Even for Skeens, I think they feel like you want to give him some sort of time in the minors to get his feet wet, to get used to the professional doing things and rhythm basically of that. So I do think that, the point being, like I said, I think there'll be a floor there that will unlikely get passed. And I think we're getting pretty close to that.
I think the carve out for that, and I agree, you're not going to get high school pitchers who get called up right away. But when you look out in X Twitter, if you're still out there in the Twitterverse, mm-hmm. you would think that every single minor league player is just being jailed unmercifully in the minor leagues. And there is, maybe we just need to chill a little bit. Paul Skeens comes up, he's the exception that proves the rule. He destroys as he gets into Major League Baseball, but every him there's a whole bunch of other guys who probably are being called up earlier because that's to the team's advantage. And I think that the area that is most prone to this, Brent, the area that we'd hit the bottom on last probably is the relief pitcher, because there's so many that they need these days, and there's fewer minor league slots for them, and they're just going to churn them. And there's the old theory of only so many bullets in the arm, especially in this era where guys are throwing so hard that they're throwing their arms out. So maybe it will be more limited, because like I pulled a chart in 2001, 326 MLB rookies. And in 2021, it was 483. It's risen like 50% over the course of 20 years. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm. But I suspect, I don't see the breakdown, but I suspect a lot of those are relief pitchers that they just churn through. They bring them up. They send them down. The Tampa Bay Rays are basically streaming their bench or streaming their AAA in fantasy terms. But I think you're right. I think there's a minimum, but...
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's In This League.
Buckle up, buckaroo. All night.
Calling up these guys. Like you said, there is a value to giving guys a little bit of a chance to... used to that. Maybe, Brent, you and I are getting to be, I won't speak for you, but we're getting to be old guys who just are like, society's in too much of a dang hurry, man. We just need to settle down a little bit here.
Yeah, no, I'm not offended by being called an old guy.
Hey, I got some gray hair, so I'm not even going to say that. I'm with you on this, but...
Very good.
All right, one more of the, what do we do with this for the future of fantasy/dynasty. I think this one has been well trodden ground, but I'm curious whether you have any new takes on it. And that is the closer roles, the saves going down. I haven't really looked at the data so far this year, I will admit, but last year there were a surprising number of guys who did keep a predominant closer role. There's less closer turnover than I would have expected last year. A lot of guys held onto those jobs, but just like I was talking about with quality starts, which is my problem, not universal problem in the industry, but it's my problem. But saves is everybody's problems because this is a pretty well universal stat, and the numbers are spreading out to the point that it has changed it. Maybe we just need to deal with the fact that saves are going to be more democratic and it makes more sense to pick up more guys, or the value of middle relievers goes up a little bit. But then it also feels like it's becoming more random. Who knows who the Tampa Rays are going to get a save out of today and which guy you're smartest to pick up. But what do you think of the changing closer roles and how it impacts Dynasty Fantasy long term, how it impacts fantasy now?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's important in this realm to look at is to try and understand the differences between the managers and the front office philosophies, is as far as giving yourself one other layer to analyze to determine how to attack saves. I think it used to be, or there's a certain number of us that always say the skills over roles kind of thing. Yes, there's some managerial influence there, but just at its basic, just get the highest skilled guy. But I think there's enough of Rocco Baldelli's and Kevin Cash's and other guys that are not tied into not tied into seeing what we think of their best saves guys or their best pitchers, of not always putting them in those situations, that it's important to try as best we can to read the clues that the teams themselves are giving us on that realm, and then to factor that into our drafting or our trading or trying to acquire saves. As far as, there still are, even though it's a widely growing belief across the game of getting your best reliever in for the best pocket of opposing hitters, and if that's Yoan Duran in the eighth and then Jax gets the save in the ninth, that's what you do because you're out to win the games. Even though that's growing, there are still managers, I think, that are, and organizations that are tied to, this is my ninth inning guy no matter what. And so for us as fantasy players, being able to be a little bit more aware of that, and like I said, overlay that, give us another layer of analysis along with how strong that best pitcher is in the pen, I think can go a long way to helping us secure, if we're in a pure saves environment without holds or whatever, can go a long way towards being successful there. I do think the other thing is, again, given how the game is gone, is that whether it's innings pitched or whether it's some sort of aspect of including holds into the categories, a way of giving more value to at least the top setup guys is another way to attack that problem, whether it's save plus holds or save plus half holds or whatever. Again, recognizing that the MLB level is changing, these guys are switching roles and it's not as hard and fast as what it once was, and finding ways of valuing more players, which kind of opens up the player pool if you're assigning some value to some of these other kind of back-end relievers that aren't leading the league in saves.
Yeah, I agree. The last Dynasty League I set up, it's been a year ago now,